Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Ham Nation is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Ham Nation, episode number 42, April 3rd, 2012. A visit with Rebecca, KB0VVT. Good evening, everybody. This is Ham Nation, a program about amateur radio and having fun. I'm K9EID, Bob Heil, and I'm just across the river from St. Louis tonight in my station lab. This is where I do all my work. And we have a very fascinating show tonight. And I don't think we've ever had this many things going on at one time, but we're going to make it happen. It's ham radio. Everything can happen because no is not in our vocabulary. Is that right? Gordon West from Costa Mesa, WB6NOA. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. There is no in our vocabulary, and we can't wait for this show to get rolling with lots of neat things going on. Hi from Costa Mesa to our friends in Dallas. Continue to take cover. And for those in Tennessee, like Don and the gang, be careful. The tornadoes are coming, we hear.
Yeah, that's right. You made it back from Milwaukee, okay? The AES Superfest, where we had an incredible time.
It was terrific. And next week, Bob, we'll have some of the outtakes and the intakes of Superfest.
Yeah, we've got a lot of pictures and videos that several people took while they were there. So I was going to have a little bit on tonight, but we're getting all kinds of other things from guys. So we'll wait until next week and really do a nice thing. And Ray Grenier did such a good time, a good job putting that together. And we all had such a great time. And while we were there, we saw so many people that watch Ham Nation. We appreciate all of you being there. And had a nice forum, which Leo introduced. It was really cool. And everybody had a good time. I got a number of emails while I was gone asking the question about this microphone, which we used last week. And I invite all of you to take your old computers and put into Google Heil Sound Hunger Games. That's the new movie that's really breaking all the records, and they're using this microphone. But go look at that YouTube thing. It's kind of cool, kind of cute. Just Heil Sound Hunger Games, that four words in the YouTube, and you'll see what's going on. So let's see if we can find out what's happening in Northern Illinois. Cheryl, how are you? Did you and Dave get back okay from Milwaukee?
Hi, everybody. Hi, Bob. Yeah, we did. We arrived safely after the two-day venture and enjoyed ourselves wholeheartedly. It was a great show, and so glad to see you, Gordon, and enjoyed meeting up with you face-to-face after a year. And nice to see you, too, Bob. It was great. I just have to compliment you on a nice shirt tonight, Bob, and we want to know, is that your formal shirt? Anyway, that was one of the quick questions pre-show there. Everybody kind of liked that, so I wanted you to know.
This is my Thunderbird shirt. Yeah. My daughter gave that to me years ago in my Thunderbird days. But we have all kinds of those shirts when you hang around Gordon and all those people in Southern California. You have to do that. So,
sure. Yeah.
Cheryl, last week we had a contest to find out who was going to win two of these incredible 866A tubes that Audio Power Labs, APL, gave us, and Jerry was our guest. And Jerry's going to be on in a few minutes, and we're going to show you the rest of what's going on there in Columbus. But there were two lucky winners of these two beautiful tubes. And then, of course, you have six T-shirts. Did you and George figure out all of the winners? Because we had some live last week, and then we also had some for the replay, you guys that got to see us over the week. Who are the winners? Let's see who's lucky.
We sure did. We, George and I, we honed it down to the winners, and I have them here for you. I'd love to follow up. The chat room winners from last week's Ham Nation episode number 41, March 28th, are the 833 tube goes to Bill Kovacs. That would be KC2OTP, Mays Landing, New Jersey. And then we have the three APL or Audio Power Labs t-shirts, and they go to Bill Sepulveda, pardon me if I don't pronounce that right, Bill. That would be K5LN in Round Rock, Texas. Tom White, who I actually met at AES, KC9UDA, Woodruff, Wisconsin. Over the weekend, I met Tom, and he is one of the t-shirt winners from the chat room. And followed by the third, Randall Kerbowie, and that would be KD8JEB from Beckley, West Virginia. And followed by the email winners for the 833 tube would be David Simon, K5DAS in Friendswood, Texas. And the APL t-shirt goes to Eric Lang, AG4DI in Centerville, Virginia, followed by the second. And Jordan, you are one of the winners for the t-shirts, the Jordan Belanti, K0JLB from Omaha, Nebraska. And also the third and final t-shirt winner from the email is Scott Johnson, which no call was listed. So we ask that you please confirm your mailing address by sending us an email, including your name and call sign, if you have one, to our contest email. That would be hamnationcontest@gmail.com. And I'll repeat that. Please send your confirmation of your mailing address with your name and call sign to hamnationcontest@gmail.com. And congratulations. And thanks to everyone for your participation in the contest. Back to you, Bob.
Oh, that's really cool. Congrats to everybody. And we do need you to confirm to that address you see. And for those that that are watching, of course, you know that's there. But for those on the replays and listening on podcast, it's hamnationcontest@gmail.com. hamnationcontest@gmail.com. Be sure all of you verify your addresses, and we'll get all of that shipped out here within the next week or so. That'll be great. Thank you so much for doing that, Jerry, and giving us all of those prizes. And thanks, George, and thanks to you, Cheryl, for collecting all of those. I know that was quite a chore. Well,
along with George Thomas, he was there with us too, getting that information. We couldn't do it without him.
No, and we appreciate it. Well, we're going to mosey right on over to Columbus, because sitting in that beautiful listening room, which we didn't have time to cover last week, are these beautiful transmitting tubes that Jerry has made into an audio amplifier. Jerry, how are you tonight? Greetings to you.
I'm great. I'm sorry about my headset pulling its plug the other night. It sounded like I wasn't listening to you. I wasn't. We're just blabbering on.
Well, that's okay. We made it just fine, and it gives us a reason for us to bring you back and tell everybody about what you were doing. You fell in love with 833s and those big broadcast transmitters, and it gave you, I think, the launch to design this wonderful power amp. Let's hear about that.
Yeah. Well, that 833 is such a weird tube, you know. It's, I don't know there's any other tube that hangs on four pins, you know. That it makes excellent audio, excellent audio, and it also makes a great RF final, and that's how it's used in a lot of Collins and Gates transmitters, with two of them generating about an equal amount of power as the two RF output tubes, and then they're combined with a modulation transformer. Anyhow, the tube is still in production. It's now made by the remnants of the Cold War, I guess. The Chinese make them. And the Russians also make them. And they're actually relatively inexpensive tubes. And they are the biggest vacuum tube in production, in full production. And that's why we chose it. Anyhow, we built some amplifiers based on it. About 2009, we started this project. And we've got some of the absolute best guys in the tube business. We wanted to take the best of the old, that is the 833s, and the best of the new microprocessor technology and switch mode power supplies to make kind of the ultimate vacuum hollow state amplifier. I think we did. We've been at CES and got just some rave reviews with it. That was great for first timers at CES. That could make you or break you. Some guy called it the best vacuum tube amplifier ever. We could put that on my gravestone. I'm all set now. Anyhow, this is the 833. It's a monoblock amplifier. And there's two 833s. The rest of the tube lineup is where am I looking here? 6550s and 12 BH7, right? And it's been engineered with transformers that are custom made for each stage. So we call it a TNT because it's tube and transformer coupled. There's no caps or resistors coupling the audio stages. And that allowed us to tune it to produce less than 1% distortion across the entire power band. And it makes 200 watts RMS. You can make more, but you can only get 18 amps out of a 20-amp wall outlet. it makes a fair amount of heat. You may need some air conditioning. But its frequency response is 15 hertz to 25 kilohertz. So we were worried about the low end and want to make sure the low end was there, and it's there. And you can see them glowing. I don't know how well. But also behind here is a microprocessor. So we have a microprocessor controlling literally everything in the amplifier, but it is not in the audio chain. It watches the audio chain, but it does not interrupt or there's no digital portion of the audio chain. So we have things like current sensors, relays, and switches.
Those things are, Jerry, those things are just beautiful. The design of the chassis and the whole concept of what it is, you guys did a beautiful job in that. So the cosmetics of it, they're just magnificent. So when they're just glowing, those tubes are stunning. So I wanted to compliment you on that. And we can see that in your picture there behind you of the amplifier actually working. They're just beautiful.
It has an enormous number of also parts you don't see, customized parts. We used a world-class industrial design outfit to help us. It wasn't all us, but basically what we did is we said, we want something Art Deco. We want something that's functional, got to move air through it, and won't electrocute the customers. That would be nice. And places to house our microprocessor and the controls. And this is what we came up with. In the back, that's where the power system is, or the transformers are. And the amplifier circuit board grabs all the back tubes. In the bottom are the power supplies, and we use switch mode power supply technology.
Driver tubes? I think they're drivers. What are those tubes? What kind?
Right, they're 6550s and 12 BA7s.
Wow.
So there's some small octal here, and I'll pull you in closer, but if I do that, we might get disconnected, so
we're okay.
Does not work.
I like it. 6550s for drivers. That's right. That's for super duper.
Well, see, now with the advent of these very large speakers that we've been seeing in the business, this thing is driving these Tidal. What model are these?
It's a Contriva Diacera SE.
These are Tidal Contriva Diacea SEs, and they cost what, 45 grand?
About 70.
Oh, 70,000. Wow.
And they make a hell of a sound. They'll knock you out of this little listening room here. By the way, this listening room was built kind of cool. It has double sheets of drywall, insulation behind it, and there's an acoustical lighting cloud above it, and there is no parallel wall. No wall in here is parallel to any other wall.
Wow.
And it has in the back a bass trap, which looks like a piece of art, but it's a bass trap.
Yeah.
Anywho,
well, we are so glad that you could spend a couple of minutes with us showing us your new room and especially the amplifier. So it's the complete finish to what you were into last week, where we saw the beginning of the old broadcast transmitters and you're falling in love with 833s. And then all of a sudden, bingo, you came up with the audio amp. So we really appreciate that.
Can we play a few notes of unlicensed, of uncopyrighted music for you? It won't come across, but it'll make me feel better.
Well, it's... It's really beautiful to see the design, and we wish you all the luck. We want everybody to go visit your site and go.
See you bye.
All right. Well, thanks to all there. Well, Dana and Ryan are there with you, and we'll have you back again, Jerry, and we'll see you on 3880 or 3885 after a while on AM, of course, with your 833 finals.
Improved method. And I'm coming to Hamvention, Dayton Hamvention, with the big rig truck. We'll have a BC1F in the back of that and the off-road Collins, a little-known Ford F-150 option.
We're going to look for you at Dayton. Who can have a mobile radio that weighs about 3.5 ton? Well, Jerry can do that. So we'll see you at Dayton.
Gear, power, but Sidemen guys, you only get half of the cycle.
Well, thanks very much. We're going to move on here because we've got so much going on, but we really appreciate you coming back and showing us your product. So everybody go look up Audio Power Labs on the internet and you'll see and learn more about what's going on there in Columbus, Ohio. Fascinating stuff. So Gordo, I think you and Susie need that in that living area to fire up your hi-fi. What do you think?
Absolutely. Well, we had a great time up at Fresno a couple of weeks ago, and I just wanted to quickly share with our viewers and listeners some of the quick shots. So, Alex, if you don't mind, let's do a quick review of M Squared Antenna Company's open house. This is their new kilowatt and a quarter 2-meter amplifier. They make one for 6 meters as well, but let me tell you, that brand new amplifier, all solid state, putting out 1,250 watts on 2 meters. I want one. This is what that amplifier looks like, all mounted up to the power supply. Power supply is 50 volts at 50 amps. Pretty nice, huh? They've done a nice job. The weather going there was not too bad, but in a few minutes, you'll find out that once we got there, the weather was pretty lousy. In fact, yeah, that is snow on Old Gordo, and the snow was coming down just outside of the Fresno area on our way home. They do everything at M Squared with robotics when it comes to drilling the masts and setting the elements, and this is one of the 5 huge robotic machines that punch all the holes and get everything aligned perfectly in their antennas. And they've got a complete shop where all the antennas are manufactured right there at the M Squared facility, times 2 buildings, twin buildings, to pull out all of these great antennas. Remember, KLM, Mike and Myrna, you see them there. They are the ones that are the absolute family behind M Squared. So Mike and Myrna, you've got a lot of fans out there, and thanks for bringing the industry up to see the M Squared get together. Now, Mike and Myrna made a statement that I think is very appropriate to our viewers, and that is you need to try different things. So the other day, I know that Cheryl was beating on me that I need to go on 75 meters and maybe do a little bit of AM. So look at this. Over my left shoulder is my resurrected, thanks to Bill Albert, WA6CAX. We pulled this together, and I'm going to turn it on. And we had it going a little bit before. The power was a little low. So, yeah, it does light up. But what we did was we added a new power supply. I got the idea from M Squared. And that new power supply is providing the B-plus for the tubes. And, yep, this good old marine radio uses tubes. It's been retuned, and we can operate on 3880 as well as 3885 double sideband. I'm going to go ahead and add the B-plus right now, and you saw things probably dim down just a little bit, but that is some of the excitement when it comes to the new radio that I've got going here. And I'm really excited to get this little guy on the air because, you know, it's neat to have this kind of Julian, quick,
hang on,
folks. Yeah, hang on just for a second, folks. Oh, my God. Oh, boy. Oh, wow. Oh, wow. Well, April Fools. Yes, just an April Fool joke. But anyway, we will be on AM. This is a working AM marine radio. And Bob, back to you. This is Gordo, WB6NOA, lighting off his old double sideband marine radio on 75. Bob, back to you.
Well, yeah, well, that was, it was a working radio until you and Julian fixed it. And George will come in after a while, and he will give you a grade for your smoke and solder. It was, smoke was pretty good. I didn't see any solder, but boy, that smoke was great. Well, that's okay. We take that very well. It's April Fools, or what? Well, a day or so ago. Gordo, you're the best. You're the best.
Thank you, Bob. And, you know, we had so many nice comments about Ham Nation at the AES get-together, as well as at CES. And they always enjoy it when something happens that they're not expecting. And, well, we had a little bit of fun. But this radio actually is operational. It's a Raymarine radio designed for medium frequency, 2 megs to 3 megs. But, you know, 3 megs is pretty close to 3.8 megs. So with a little bit of twiddling, thanks to Bill, WA6CAX. Thanks for the tube switch outs and our make-believe power supply. No, we won't do the smoke again, I promise. It will be on the air tonight. Draws probably 18 or 19 amps at 12 volts as soon as I squish the microphone. So I dare not transmit just yet. But you'll hear us tonight on AM. Back to you, Bob.
Oh, how wonderful. We just do have a lot of fun here, that's for sure. Well, we have a very special guest tonight, and before we bring it on, I've got some slides that her father sent me, and Alex, if you can find the first one, the cover of 73 magazine, we want to show you a magazine cover of a young lady, Rebecca Rich, KB0VVT. Rebecca was 9 and passed her license, and there's quite a story, and we're very happy that she said, we will come on as a guest. So, Cheryl, I want you to introduce Rebecca and see what she's doing today.
Great. We welcome you, Rebecca, KB0VVT. How are you doing tonight?
Good. How are you?
Not bad. I'm so glad that you've joined us. I'm sure our viewers will be enchanted by your story, and we're very happy to have you with us here on Ham Nation tonight. Rebecca, from my research, I know that you earned your technician class amateur radio license at age 7, and then this accomplishment was actually overshadowed by your soon passing all written and code requirements, inclusive of the 20 word per minute code exam, to earn your extra class ticket when you were 8 years old. I know you went up through each license class. You also had the advanced license prior to the extra. Wow, what an accomplishment. Can you tell us what influenced you to become involved with amateur radio? What age you were first exposed to the subject? And ultimately, what sparked your interest to get your amateur radio license?
Yeah, sure. My dad has been a ham since he was a teenager. It's Dave, KG0US. And he encouraged my mom, Barb, KG0UT, to start working on her license. And at the time when she was studying for her general test, my dad made a computer software program that loaded up the question pool and turned into sort of a game to study with. And I was a young child, maybe 6 or 7 years old, I started playing with the game, which was the game to me. And my dad started noticing that I was starting to get more and more questions correct as I kept playing the game. And eventually they decided that they would rewrite the software for the tech license and the novice license. And I started from there and worked forward earning my licenses.
Oh, awesome. That's so great. And what was your inspiration to actually keep going to get the top class license? Some people just get the first or second and then they stop.
Yeah, sure. I think largely it was a family thing. So my mom was earning her general and I kept working with her until I earned my general. And then at the time, my dad was also a general, so we all decided together that we'd keep going forward. And I also think there were other things involved, like toy water guns and Barbie dolls and everything else to kind of encourage me. But yeah, we kept rewriting the software and eventually did the advanced together. And we took the extra 20 more per minute code test first. And then a month later, took the extra written exam, and we all passed on the same day.
Oh, wow. That is so great. It's such a team effort that you guys did together. That's wonderful. You know, I've actually seen a photo of you with a T-shirt that says, I'm proud to be a no-code ham. And, of course, no is spelled K-N-O-W. And from my research, you also have a claim as a first chair violinist. Do you feel that understanding and being able to play music helped you along and learn the Morse code?
Well, at the time I learned the Morse code, actually, I hadn't started playing the violin yet. That would have happened maybe 3 or 4 years later. However, I do think that learning music could really help kids, especially, or adults, learn Morse code. There's a lot of emphasis on rhythm and, you know, maybe picking out certain tones and a large sound, which would be analogous to, like, a pile up in a contest, for instance. So I definitely think there are, like, advantages to learning music as it applies to Morse code.
So you're basically inclined towards music, but it wasn't there first.
No.
And one other thing, can you tell us about your Dayton Youth Forum presentation that was entitled Half My Life in Amateur Radio?
Yeah, sure. I had a great opportunity, Carol Perry's Dayton Youth Forum. It was my second presentation, and it was conveniently
Excellent.
8 years after I first got my license, which would have been half of my life in amateur radio. So I had a nice little presentation on amateur radio contesting and activities with amateur radio, such as like awards like the Workdoll States and DXCC, and had
wow.
a great opportunity to encourage youth at the forum that, you know, they could do anything they wanted to with amateur radio. They could learn a lot about geography, meet a lot of really cool people, earn a lot of awards, and there were infinite activities that they could do, and it was a lot of fun.
That's excellent. That's so great. That you want to encourage others, and you're really doing that. I want you to know how much impact that your being here tonight will have on.
And I'll take over for Cheryl. That big impact on all the kids that are watching. Now, one more time, tell me about the music and the CW. Do you feel that there's a correlation between being musical and doing the CW?
Yeah, sure, definitely. At the time I didn't have a musical background, but I definitely think there are a lot of things musically related, such as, you know, learning different rhythms, which could also be gotten through dance, or picking up certain tones in a large noise, like an orchestra. It's similar to maybe picking up a certain call sign or a certain Morse code tone on the air, so you could pick up call signs in a pileup.
Wow.
In terms of like an overall setting, I mean, you learn a lot of leadership skills and cooperation, things like that in an orchestra setting, which are all useful for things like amateur radio and life in general.
Oh, that is super, Rebecca. Now, Rebecca, you just came back from doing a contest in Hawaii. Is that right?
Actually, this trip to Hawaii was just for relaxation with the family. In the past, though, I was in Hawaii at the USS Missouri in Pearl Harbor. I was invited by John Peters, his K1ER, to operate in the USS Missouri radio room, which is a great opportunity. I was out there for Kids Day, and we had two stations set up, one under KH6BB, which is the club call there for the USS Missouri. And for that station, we were doing phone contacts. And it was really awesome because John Peters was able to allow any like children and their parents to come down to the radio room, which would usually be like a restricted area on the battleship, and they got to view the radio room and learn about amateur radio. There were a lot of times it was a little bit of a challenge with language barriers, but I think we had a great opportunity to show a lot of people about amateur radio.
And, oh, wow. Rebecca, that is so cool. We'll go back to Cheryl in just a moment, but just before, Rebecca, what do you have to say to kids your age thinking of getting into ham radio? Will that help them maybe get a job down the line?
I think it could. Amateur radio definitely opens up a lot of opportunities, both you know, if you're interested in geography and learning about the world and its cultures, there's a lot of opportunity there for careers. Also, there's a lot of opportunity in electronics, electrical engineering, computer science, radio engineering. You meet a lot of really great people. And I mean, I could tell you from experience, it does come up time and time again when you're applying to colleges or, you know, anything beyond where you are now. So,
wow. That is so great. Well, Rebecca, thanks so much. I'm going to get you back to Cheryl, and then she'll do a close. But thanks so much for joining us all here on Ham Nation. Cheryl, back to you.
Hey, one thing I want to do before Cheryl gets back in here, Rebecca, I noticed a picture of you I think you were building a K2 or K3. Do you do any building, or have you built a lot of things throughout your amateur radio career?
Sure. I built a K3 transceiver for my father as kind of a present for our home station. That was one project, and probably the only one that's mainly for amateur radio. I've done some dipole antennas and other random fix-its around the station. However, I have done some stuff through school. We restored a 1949, I believe, Emerson FM, AM-FM receiver for one of my classes as an old tube radio. It was a lot of fun. And just recently, I took a course on RF communications lab, and we built a FM transceiver on PC boards instead of tubes. So.
That's wonderful. Well, we also want to know a little bit about what you're doing. You went to high school, of course, and then you went to MIT, and this is for electrical engineering, right?
Yeah, I went to high school in Raytown, Missouri, which is a suburb of Kansas City, and then I headed off to MIT in the fall of 2006 and got my bachelor's in electrical engineering in June of 2010. And we have a 5-year program, so you can stay an extra year to get your master's in engineering. And I got that in electrical engineering and computer science in June 2011.
That's really super. Really proud of you to do that. It's just such a wonderful thing. And amateur radio had to play a huge part in guiding your life. And so there's really a wonderful opportunity for not only children but adults too to use amateur radio as a training ground. And do you have a lot of interest of your professors and your classes and so on to refer back to ham radio when you're in these classes, or are things do they discuss the amateur radio? You get into that at all?
There are some discussions of it. My advisor now, Bob Dutton at Stanford, he mentioned, hey, you're into amateur radio, this will be awesome. And he introduced me to a lot of people that are involved with the amateur radio club here. So that was a great opportunity. He's also the professor that teaches electronics and the RF communications lab. So there is a lot of tie-in in those classes to communications applications, which could include things like amateur radio and beyond. So there's definitely a lot of mention of things related to amateur radio and academics here.
Well, that's really super. And of course, I have to say that you're now in your PhD program at Stanford in electrical engineering. How long do you have to go before that's all accomplished?
It's going to be quite the long haul. I'm not sure what it'll turn out to be since I already got my master's. But yeah, I just started here in September towards my PhD. I still need to take the quals, which are a lot of fun. But I'm doing some research right now with the COVAX group here, which does biomedical devices for non-invasive measuring of cardiovascular signals, like EKGs or accelerometers in the chest or respiration. And we will do some stuff with epilepsy. So.
Oh, that's really wonderful. Well, I'll let Cheryl finish up, and I'm sure she's got some questions here about where you're headed from here. But I know one thing for sure, every top-notch contest station in the country is probably after you to come and work their station for the big contest. So hope that all works out for you. Cheryl, see what we can do here from Northern Illinois to finish up with Rebecca. And what a great amateur radio operator.
Yeah, Rebecca. Rebecca, hats off to you. I'll tell you, unbelievable. I just want to list those amateur radio awards one more time. Five-band worked all states. The WAS award at age 15. The DX Century Club at age 12 and worked all states at age 9. Incredible. I'm just blown away by what your accomplishments are just in ham radio, let alone everything else that you're up to there. I want to know, what are your favorite bands to operate on HF?
I think I'd have to say my favorite bands are probably 15, 20, and 40, somewhere in there. That's what I tend to generally stick to if possible.
And did you ever operate other modes of amateur radio? Packet, D-Star, Echolink, AM?
I've done some work, very minimal, with Iridium PSK, and then some with satellite communications. But in general, I tend to stick to CW. It's kind of my niche, I guess. I enjoy also, during contests, I can eat while I'm operating, so it's a nice little... I didn't really stick to CW.
You know, I know you told me you enjoyed Field Day, and when did you last participate, and is that something you plan to do again in the near future?
Yeah, I love Field Day. It's a great exercise, both in putting up equipment and getting things functional and operating, and interacting with your city and the public. The last time I was able to operate, unfortunately, was back in 2007, so it's been a while. I've had some complications with work and school that have kind of kept me from that weekend, unfortunately. Always seems to be that weekend, but... yeah, I generally in the past have done Field Day with the Raytown Amateur Radio Club, which is K0GQ in Raytown, Missouri. And we do a really huge 2A setup in the metro there that usually does pretty well. And I sit in the CW truck and operate for hours. So it's a lot of fun.
Excellent. And one last question here that I wanted to ask. It's more a general one. What would you like to be known for, Rebecca, out of all of this so far?
Oh, it's a tough question. I would want to be known for my contesting because I do put a lot of work, especially in November sweepstakes and things related. But also, I think in youth involvement. I mean, I'm really interested in, you know, talking to youth and telling them, you know, that they can do whatever they want to do. Age really isn't a factor. And, you know, the world's kind of out there waiting for them, and amateur radio is a great venue for that.
So jump in with both feet, right? And grab the horns and go with it. And absolutely, you sure have. You know, it was wonderful to hear about your life journey, Rebecca, and we enjoyed having you here as our guest with honors, of course you have, here on Ham Nation. And we appreciate you taking time out of your evening and chatting with me prior to this. And thank you greatly for everything, Rebecca. It's nice to see that the ladies participate in amateur radio, and I'm so proud to have met you and know you. Rebecca Rich, KB0VVT.
Thank you so much.
That's wonderful. Rebecca, are we going to see you at Dayton this year?
I'm going to try my best to get out there. It really depends on how exams and classes and research and everything schedules out, but I'm crossing my fingers I can find myself out there. So.
All right. Well, I hope to see you there. We have a Ham Nation booth, so you stop by and say hello to all of the people that show up there, and I know you have a great time there with Carol Perry and all of them. So congratulations on your life. What an amazing life. And to your parents have got to be congratulated for bringing you through all of this. And look what's happened just because of ham radio. And we're indeed grateful to have you on tonight. So come back and visit us again, and maybe we'll see you on the band. Gordon and I know especially, we'll be a little slower than, 45 words or whatever you're doing now? Is it so?
I can do up to 52 words per minute, but I try to stay around 30, and I do go slower,
That is great.
Gordo, I guess you're going to have your reader on if you're going to copy her. I know I will.
QRS, please. QRS. Thanks, Rebecca.
Send slower. good night, Rebecca. And thanks so much. You were terrific. Oh, God. 40.
73.
No, 52 words a minute. What are we going to do there? Oh, can N0IRS copy that, Cheryl? Oh, wait a minute. He does CW, doesn't he?
I know he does CW. I don't think it's 52 and slowing down and putting the brakes on to go 30, but he could give it a try, I think.
We're not talking about age here, folks. We're talking about how many words per minute. What a fun thing. And thanks so much. It was nice, Cheryl. You did a great job. Really great. So I guess we need to... go down and see what's happening in New Orleans and learn about the news of the day on amateur radio. And I hope all the storms are going to bypass them today. So let's see what Don Wilbanks has for our newsline.
From Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 1807, here are the Ham Nation headlines for Tuesday, April 3rd, 2012. The 8th Global Amateur Radio Emergency Conference, now coined as Mike Garrick 2012, will be held from November 12th to the 14th in Malaysia. Among the draft topics to be discussed at Mike Garrick 2012 are high-frequency emergency operating procedures, presentations from the three regions of the IARU, and presentations from societies with recent disaster relief communications operations. Also to be discussed will be the future of the Global Amateur Radio Emergency Conference itself. Garrick began in 2005 and is now the premier annual event attended by those with an interest in amateur radio providing emergency communications during training exercises or in response to disasters. As such, it attracts participants from around the world. Some breaking news for those who operate the 60-meter band. In response to requests for clarification from the ARRL, the National Telecommunications and Information Administration says that it has no objection to the use of a broader range of data emissions by amateurs on the 5 megahertz frequencies on 60 meters. In an email response to ARRL Chief Executive Officer David Sumner, K1ZZ, Carl Nebbia, the Associate Administrator of the NTIA Office of Spectrum Management, stated that his organization had no interest in limiting the types of emission used by the amateurs, as long as the data emission does not exceed the 2.8 kilohertz bandwidth as generated by the upper sideband transmitter. The ARRL said that its original understanding was that the NTIA preferred that the use of 2K80J2D emission be limited to PAC-TOR 3. The NTIA now says that is not the case. Big news on the ham radio space scene, this with word that the Japan Aerospace Exploration Agency has announced the upcoming launch of 5 amateur radio satellites. The first launch is the H-2A that takes place May 17th. It will carry the amateur radio satellite Horyu-2. This to be followed July 21st with the HTV-3 mission. It will deliver the GEM Small Satellite Orbital Deployer, or JSSOD, to the International Space Station. That unit will enable small satellites to be deployed from the ISS using the Japanese Experiment Module Robot Arm. The Japanese amateur radio satellites WeWish and FitSat-1, along with San Jose State University's TechEdSat and Vietnam's F-1, will also be delivered to the ISS on this mission. Plans are for them to be deployed to orbit on September 20th. NASA has announced the release of the ISS Live app for iPhone, iPad, and Android. The ISS Live app delivers live streaming data from the International Space Station, and users can take a virtual 3D tour of the Mission Control Center and the space station and view Mission Control console displays with real-time data, interactive educational lessons using the data, as well as crew and science timelines with individual crew members. Social media and international science experiment details are also available via the app. The space agency calls ISS Live an innovative interactive application that provides a novel way to learn about the International Space Station while on the go. To learn more and find links to download the ISS Live app, visit spacestationlive.jsc.nasa.gov. That's where you'll find the icons for the iPhone App Store and the Android Market. And finally, although this story wasn't part of the current Amateur Radio Newsline report due to deadlines, we would be remiss if we didn't mention the passing of Fred Maya, W5YI. Fred passed away Wednesday, March 28th, following a battle with cancer. Fred's website, W5YI.org, is a clearinghouse of amateur radio information and the flagship outlet for Gordon West's study material. All of us here at Amateur Radio Newsline are saddened by the loss of this giant in amateur radio. Fred Maya, W5YI, was 76. That's all from Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news, brought to you each and every week for nearly 35 years at www.arnewsline.org. I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW 73, and we'll see you next time here on Ham Nation.
Oh, thanks very much, Don. That's terrific. And so sad to hear about Fred Maya. We heard quite a bit about that this weekend, Gordon. And I know you were very close to Fred. That was sad news, my friend.
It really was, Bob. And, you know, the neat thing about Fred was he would not let up on getting the no-code amateur radio license onto the FCC's dockets. And Fred did a great job of getting the ham radio super boosted for a lot more folks joining ham, not having to pass a code test. And then, secret, we get them into CW. We've never had more folks than right now learning the code now that it's no longer a test item. And Fred saw that in the testing place, that folks would freeze up. So, by golly, his communicator class, as he called it, which turned out to be the no-code technician, was a hit. At first, everybody was skeptical, but Fred, who did code at 50 and 60 words a minute himself, was very much for the code. He just didn't think it had to be a pressure 5-word-a-minute exam for the brand new ham. And he was right. We now have more hams learning the code, thanks to Fred.
Absolutely. And that's really showing its whole structure, because the more that we see of new hams that get into the wonderful hobby, not really wanting to do any code, they get into it and find out all this fun thing we do, all of a sudden they find out there's a new language, and it's really wonderful to see so many guys and gals picking up the code. So Fred was right. Fred was right, and we're going to miss him a lot. Well, you know, I get a lot of information from the viewers, and I ask you for your pictures. I have to show you one of a preamplifier. See if Alex can bring it up for us. This is a very cool thing that happened. Ray, W2RKG, sent me this picture. He's been hearing us talk about using a mixer into the radio and so on. And he wanted to do this, but he didn't have the space. And he thought, well, hey, we can do this a little better. Boy, did he ever. He had a Yaesu 7800. And what he did is he bought a little preamplifier board, and he built a microphone preamp. It cost him $13.95, and it came from Canakit, Centerpoint Electronics in Utah. Centerpoint Electronics. And man, this is really cool. He built it in about 20 minutes, and he built it in a it was a little plastic box that was a fuse holder and an old a Motorola or a GE radio. And there you go, learning how to use things that we should have thrown away, but we're hams. We don't throw anything away. How cool is that? So I wanted to acknowledge Ray. What a great job he did in this little box about this big. And it's his microphone preamplifier, and gives him really wonderful audio into his 7800. So you see, you can do things. You just have to go try it and see what happens. And sometimes it's smoke, and sometimes the solder sticks. Is that right, George? How are you doing, George? You okay? Storm's not getting you, are they?
No, the storm hasn't been too bad here, Bob. It thunderstormed and rained a little bit today, but that's about all. I'm hearing an echo come back on Skype, so I don't know what that's about, but how are you guys?
Hey, we're good. We got back from AES, and everybody fared well, and so many people asking about when they were going to get to meet you, and of course, we know that's going to be NAB, and it's going to be Dayton, and I've had several people ask about NAB. We're doing a Ham Nation show on Tuesday afternoon. We'll have to get the exact hour of that show for you, but we're doing a really great show. It's going to have Leo in it. I think Kirk Karnak is going to be there. He's another host of a broadcast show here on Twit. I think all these guys that are hams that will be there, we'll have a whole bunch that day. So you want to be sure and watch Ham Nation in the afternoon or on the replay from NAB. And then we'll have the ham radio reception, which we will live stream on Wednesday night at 6 o'clock. The local time there. So George, we're looking forward to that, and we'll see how it all goes as we get into Vegas and have a big time. And it's really good to see you. And where'd you get that shirt, man? What a cool shirt.
I picked up this shirt when we were out at the grand opening of the Twit Brick House, and boy. You know, I've really enjoyed it. There's not too many of these around, I don't guess. So I'm not sure how you get one. I don't know if Leo and the gang sell T-shirts or not.
Well, it's great. It's really cool. A Twit T-shirt. There you go. What's happening in the smoke and solder department tonight? You blow anything up?
Well, almost, but I've got a really exciting episode tonight on Smoke and Solder that I know you and Gordo are going to be excited to see. So, Alex, if you've got the video ready, let's roll it. As you may have noticed, in the past few years, high-frequency ham radio beam antennas have not only become more complex, but also far more narrow in beam width. Some claim to be as narrow as 4 to 5 degrees with a front-to-back ratio of 30 dB or more. This in turn requires a more accurate rotor and pointing device, one that can swing a very heavy multiband Yagi from east to west in record-setting time, yet be able to stop on a dime without permitting any antenna motion, even in gale-force winds. Well, down under in windy Perth, Australia, a company known as Twist Antenna has been doing research aimed at producing a new antenna pointing system, one that not only minimizes power consumption, but is also capable of automatically synchronizing up to 360 cardinal gramometers for exact antenna orientation. And while it's taken a bit of time to contort, now it's here. Meet the maker of the Twist Antenna Model 1-4-2012 Contest and DX Rotor System.
To be quite candid, the only really new principle involved is that instead of rotational power being generated by the relative motion of conductors and fluxes, in the turbo entabulator contest and DX rotor system, motion is produced by the medial interaction of magnetoreluctance and capacitive directance.
During the initial design phase, the concept was to use a base plate of free famulated amulite surmounted by a malleable logarithmic casing attached in such a way that the two spurving bearings ran in a direct line with the parametric fan. This meant offsetting the rotor from the tower by 36 to 40 inches. Not a good idea of installation in small city lots in crowded urban areas. Now, however, after several years of research and development, the final design stage consists of six hydroscopic marzule vanes fitted to an amberfescent lunar wane shaft made of titanium alloy to prevent any side fumbling, and there's no need to offset it from the tower centerline. The main traction winding is of the normal Lotus Odaltoid type, placed in a panoramic semi-bulloid slot of the stator. Every seventh conductor is connected by a non-reversible tremie pipe to the differential girdle spring on the up end of the grammators. Moreover, whenever fluorescent square motion is required, it may also be employed in conjunction with the drawn reciprocation ding alarm to reduce sinusoidal deplaneration. In other words, when the rotor braking system is engaged, the antenna is locked in position and will not move unless you, or possibly your pet cat, hit the control box to move it. The Twist Antenna Model 1-4-2012 Turbo Entabulator Antenna Pointing System has now reached a high level of development and is being successfully used in the operation of the fully functional automated DXCC logging station of Milford Turins in the United Kingdom. Best of all, the Entabulator Antenna Pointing System is now available for less than $19.99 per tower installation kit wherever Twist Antenna products are sold. Now here's Gordo to explain in layman's terms exactly how the antenna system works.
How does it work, Gordo?
By osmosis?
Close enough. Well, we had a great time making that, and I want to thank Bill Pasternak for putting the script together and for Tommy and Jimmy and Peter, my friends over at Amateur Logic, for helping out with some of the shots in that. It was a lot of fun to do.
Jimmy got to bring back his famous blowtorch, didn't he?
Yeah, and I guess Tommy's going to be known for sleeping now.
Oh, boy. George, you are too much. Well, I had no idea that one was coming around, so I would have definitely had the fire extinguisher ready. Good job, George.
Thanks, Gordo. Let's do another contest. What do y'all say? I've got a question here, and I hope you were paying attention during that last segment. This week, we're going to give away another copy of Constructing HF Wire Antennas from Jerry Buston, KR7KZ. That's a great book. I'd recommend you check it out. And you'll send your answers to our usual address, hamnationcontest@gmail.com. And the question is, what connects to the amberfescent lunar wane shaft of the turbo entabulator rotor system? So if you know the answer to that, send it to me at hamnationcontest@gmail.com, and we'll pick some lucky winner for the book.
And that is a great book. I have a couple of different copies of his books, and they are fabulous. So I'll have to do a replay and see myself, George. Good job.
That was wonderful.
Well, thanks.
Absolutely great. We'll try to see you on 75 or 40 after a while. We've been having luck hearing you on 40, 72, 68. Bill, Mike do such a good job keeping that all going, so we'll hook up with you. And also on that frequency is Amanda. Amanda, are you there from Colorado tonight?
Yes, I am. Good evening, everybody. How are you doing?
Hey, we're all good, and we look forward to seeing what kind of tales you have from our amateur radio friends tonight.
Well, last week I had asked everyone to share how they got their wiles or their significant other involved in ham radio. And I picked a great story from Mike Box, that's N6BOX in Moreno Valley, California. And him and his YL got he got his YL involved in ham radio out of necessity, and I thought that was perfect. What this goes to is that he's always working the graveyard shift about 60 miles from home, and his lovely wife Robin was going to school all day about 15 miles from home, and the only time they would see each other is whoosh on the interstate, wave at each other. And so they finally, they always talked on their cell phones, of course, and exchanged all their hellos, I love to use, those kind of things. Well, 1 month they got their cell phone bill and it was $200. $200, you guys. So same week she had her finals in school, she decided to go ahead and take her technician license. And she passed both. Hallelujah, Robin. Hi. And ever since, they've both enjoyed it so much. And he actually, he bought her a wonderful mobile radio. And he was trying to point out to her the TS-2000 in the store, brand new. They were still pre-order, I believe. And she said, oh, you know, we'll see about that. And she felt bad that she didn't let him get it. The next week, she went into the store and ordered it for him. So thank you, Robin. You're such a sweetie. So thanks, Mike, for that story. And I wish you both the best of luck.
Oh, wow. That is terrific. And, you know, the best part of that story, Amanda, is now all the hams can tune into this the lovemaking as they're talking back and forth as they're communicating on ham radio.
That's right. It's so sweet.
That's great. Well, thank you for collecting all of these stories. And everybody, send your stories to Amanda. Amanda, you want to give your email address for those that are listening on the podcast so they'll be able to send you all of their tales.
Okay, you guys. So all your stories, send them to hamtales@live.com. That's hamtails at live, live.com, you guys. Thank you so much.
All right. Well, we'll look forward to seeing you here next week and have some more of those great tales. So I think we're getting close to closing it down. You know, we did talk with Rebecca about rhythms and music. So you want to pay attention here at the end of the show. There's Joe Walsh, WB6 ACU, who will be playing the theme. And it's, of course, made up of H-A-M. And, hey, guess what? He took that, and I said, I think that would be a good rhythm for that song. And what do you think, Gordo? It worked, didn't it?
It did. That's a fabulous bit of music that he has produced for us. And on 40 Meters, we had 66 contacts last week. D-Star, 47 contacts to the Ham Nation. Echolink, 43. So those of you in the chat room and those tuning us in live, get on the air. I don't know about my old AM radio, but we'll meet you on sideband 7268 or around there. Back to you, Bob.
You got it. All right. We'll be looking on 3850 around in there somewhere. And there's so many frequencies we could cover, but that's where we are right now. And like a couple of the guys said, we're going to have to start finding a good CW frequency and have Ham Nation after the show on CW. So listen, thanks a lot. We had a lot of fun tonight, and we'll be back next week. We've got a really good guest next week. Steve's going to be with us, WB2WIK, and he is just a master at teaching us all kinds of things and a great operator. So he'll be on with us next week, and we look forward to that. That's all I have from here. 73, everybody, and thanks so much for the TWiT staff, everyone in Petaluma that keeps this going. Alex in his beautiful white shirt and tie tonight, and Lynn with her really cool t-shirt from TWiT. Look at that.
Yeah.
Look at that.
Yeah.
Yeah. We appreciate all of your help. And, of course, to Leo Laporte for making this bandwidth possible. And each and every one of us amateur radio operators are so indebted to all of you out there for giving us this great opportunity to get together and share the science, the knowledge, and the fun of ham radio. We'll see you next week right here on Ham Nation. For now, 7-3, this is K9EID.